Hello everyone and welcome to Shadow Talk, ReliaQuest's weekly threat intelligence and information security podcast. My name is Stefano and I'm back in great company because we've got Kim on the line. Hey Kim, how are you?
Hello, doing well, thank you. Glad to be back.
Nice, glad to have you here. And there is also one of ReliaQuest CISO, Rick Holland. Hey, Rick.
Hello, good to be here with y'all.
How are you?
Good, good. Back home after being in the UK for InfoSec. Glad to be home in sweltering heat of Texas.
That sounds very pleasant. Almost jealous. To be fair, it's really hot in here too. So,
well, it was almost 42 degrees on Wednesday here, so I don't think you actually want to be here.
Okay, not that much. Yeah, not that much. You definitely win the competition of the worst weather right now. So it's good to have you here. We've got a really interesting episode today because we're going to be talking about SolarWinds and everything that is happening right now with the US Securities and Exchange Commission. Then we'll talk about a new campaign that's been detected on APT29. And finally, we're going to discuss our new annual threat report that has just been published on our website and to our customers. So let's get started with the first story. So you may remember what happened with SolarWinds back in December 2020. But if you don't, we're just going to give a quick refresher in a second. But basically, a new press release has come out in the past few days where the SolarWinds executives announced that the US Securities and Exchange Commission is maybe close to take legal actions against them because of what happened in 2020. So before we go into that, Rick, can you tell us a little bit of what happened in December 2020? I remember for me it was like one of the big first moments, you know, first like major incidents while working as a CTI analyst. So definitely left an impact. But yeah, can you give us an overview of what happened then?
It almost feels like it was a decade ago, and it was just on the heels of Log4j as well, as I recall this months after that. But essentially, Mandiant disclosed an intrusion into their organization, which ultimately led to what discovery of APT29 operating in SolarWinds, which is a Texas-based IT company, basically doing management of assets in the environment. I've actually used SolarWinds in the past. It was a classic supply chain, a sophisticated supply chain attack, right? In a long string of supply chain attacks, you know, kind of reminiscent of, you know, RSA Secure ID getting targeted way back in the day. And then Bit9, now Carbon Black, also had a supply chain attack. And these things have obviously continued. The interesting thing that has come out since then is on Friday, so just a week ago, and it seems like it often happens on a Friday, you know, companies will disclose they've had a breach, vulnerabilities get disclosed, but you know, a lot of times on the Friday stuff, it's because it's going into the weekend. They hope they can manage the news cycle. I think it's a PR strategy for a lot of organizations, but in this form 8K, which is a Securities and Exchange Commission filing, and I really like the SEC forms. Maybe I geek out on it, but you know, there's the 10K, which I've talked about a lot in my career, which US public companies file, and it has their risk factors in it. And you can actually learn a lot about you can start to understand from a strategic level what's important to the business. So they acknowledged that that they had received this Wells notice, and I'd never heard of a Wells notice before, but essentially it informs a respondent of charges a regulator intends to bring and allows that respondent to respond. So it's what it seems like is they have a chance to respond and then they'll get the formal charges. These are civil charges, not criminal charges. I actually was looking at the Securities and Exchange Commission's enforcement manual on Wells notice. My joke there was, if you want to take a nap, that is a great thing to read. But the thing that's particularly interesting in this is they're targeting current and former employees, including CFO and the CISO. And so if you look at this within the context of the Joe Sullivan Uber case, for, you know, he avoided jail time. That was a couple of months ago when that came out. But this concept of liability for chief information security officers, and one of the challenges that the CISOs have is they don't have some of the same types of protections that other executives would have. There's something called directors and officers insurance, D&O insurance. CISOs don't have this. So we don't really know what's in this Wells notice. You can make some assumptions that I don't know if it's similar to the Uber case where something was trying to be hidden or something questionable occurred, at least in the eyes of the regulator, on the way that they conducted or communicated around that, you know, Russian APT intrusion of SolarWinds. So it remains to be seen. So we want to track that, but it is worrisome for CISOs, these two things happening, especially in such a short time period, and should give people pause. You know, if you're negotiating a new job as a CISO, you probably want to try to have some protections for yourself. And then B, I think it just highlights, you know, the choices that you make in a breach and how you communicate could have, you know, implications for you years after the fact. So it's a little worrisome.
Yeah, that's a really interesting take, because there are not a lot of CISOs talking about that out there. So that's interesting to know. And it was also interesting for me to see this sort of new potential charges. We still don't know exactly what's going to happen, but, you know, to see that there is movement around that part. And then on the other side, like SolarWinds spokesperson recently claimed that the attack was not, you know, a classic supply chain attack, but it was like highly sophisticated and unforeseeable, which is a very interesting choice of words, I think. And they also added that the attack was carried out by a global superpower using, and I'm quoting here, using novel techniques in a new type of threat that cybersecurity experts had never seen before. So they're basically saying it wasn't our responsibility because it's something that we couldn't prevent, that we couldn't foresee. But in a way, that kind of supply chain attacks, we already seen that in the past. So what are your thoughts on this? Like, how unforeseeable and extremely sophisticated was this?
Well, if the US, the UK, Russia, China, Israel, APT groups want to target you, they're going to, I mean, they have the resource. You know, we always talk about on the podcast capabilities and intent. They have both the capabilities and the intent. They're being directed by an intelligence agency to accomplish some type of goals. So I would, in this case, I wonder if it's not so much that they were compromised, it's how they responded to the compromise is what I would hope is going on here, because anyone could call, you know, if APT 29 is going to come a call in, or, you know, the NSA, GCHQ, et cetera, you're going to get compromised. I don't know. It remains to be seen. We can see what comes out there, but hopefully it would be a bad, dangerous precedent if regulators were coming after companies being targeted by sophisticated actors with essentially unlimited resources to target their organization.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll have to see what happens next, because that's definitely interesting to see which part of this whole story is the main target of these SEC, I don't know how you call it, but like charges for the moment. And in terms of the whole SolarWinds story and everything that's coming after, what lessons could we all learn from it? Like, is there any kind of advice, like CISO advice or just RIC advice or lessons that you've learned from all of this?
Well, one is kind of what I alluded to is, it's not if you get compromised, it's how you respond to the compromise, and falling back to detection and response in particular against a sophisticated threat actor is your only real option. It does make me wonder, you know, we're in the midst of the Move It stuff with Klopp, which obviously we've talked about quite a bit for the past 3 weeks. But I wonder, you know, this was a couple years ago, and the timelines could Move It and progress. I don't know why I said it as if I was a Brit. Progress. Progress is going to have something similar coming, right? Supply chain attack, you know, and there's such a long tail on these types of things. So, you know, ultimately, I think you got to plan for failure and fall back to detection and response.
the good old classics, right? And okay, so let's now move to the second section of this episode. And we're not going too far from what we just discussed, because we're staying still in the realm of Russian-sponsored threat actors, because in a series of tweets, Microsoft recently disclosed a spike in credential-stealing attacks conducted by the Russian state-affiliated group known as, and here there are a lot of names, Midnight Blizzard, also known as APT-29, Cozy Bear, Iron Hemlock, and the Dukes. So you choose your favorite one. If I have to choose one, I think I'm a bit nostalgic, so I may go with Cozy Bear. I don't know. Which one would you pick, guys?
I quite like the Dukes. I hadn't heard that one before.
Me neither. Yeah. It's really, that is like a thing in the cybersecurity industry. Like, it's really hard to keep track of all the different names and of all the vendors picking up their names. So in this new campaign, apparently the intrusions targeted multiple sectors such as governments, IT service providers, NGOs, defense, and critical manufacturing sectors. So it was like really wide ranging. It wasn't extremely targeted to just one sector, one geography. So Kim, can you tell us more about this campaign and what APT-29 did in this occasion?
Yeah, so the group used residential proxy services during these attacks, and they were using them likely for very short periods of time, all with the aim of kind of obfuscating the source of their attacks, trying to thwart defenders like coming in on one IP address and quickly changing to others, so it made tracking very difficult. And during the campaign, they used a variety of techniques. So they used password spraying, brute force, and also token theft. And they were also conducting session replay attacks. So for anyone that doesn't know, that's when a threat actor will intercept a legitimate session and then reuse it to impersonate a legitimate user. But what was interesting about that was that Microsoft assessed that it was likely that those stolen sessions were acquired during an illicit sale, so that maybe APT-29 had purchased it in a criminal forum or through some other illicit means.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And based on what we already know about APT-29 and what we observed in the past, like, where does this campaign fit? Is it in line, or are we seeing something different than usual?
No, it's pretty much in line with the activity they've carried out before. So thinking about SolarWinds that we were just talking about, the group stole passwords from sessions, so stored in browsers. They were using compromised email accounts, hijacking those emails specifically from like executives, targeting specific people within the businesses to then send out more phishing emails, look more legitimate. And they are also well known for conducting password spraying, password guessing attacks. So in terms of techniques, it's all very in line with what we've seen the group do before. And similarly with who they were targeting, those sectors that you mentioned, government, IT service providers, critical sectors, that all fits in with that scope as well. All in the wheelhouse of an APT group, and they're looking for targets that are going to be of that are going to hold valuable information that will be of use to the Russian state.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like either, you know, sectors that you don't have high value for like a foreign intelligence agency, or like IT service providers like SolarWinds, that is stuff that they're sort of sectors that can grant you in the future more access to those sectors that we mentioned before.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's definitely in line, even with what we were just discussing about SolarWinds. And in these occasions, APT went hunting for valid credentials. There were, like, we didn't see like a specific sort of sector or geography. It was pretty wide ranging. Why do you think is that? Like, what do you think they're gonna try and do with those credentials?
Well, it seems to me that perhaps there, this is some sort of build up to another SolarWinds. So SolarWinds began with stolen credentials, using those to access the accounts and then conducting that supply chain attack. So perhaps we might see something similar. And I think the timing of this is interesting with what's happening on the ground with the Russia-Ukraine war. So Ukraine is steadily making progress during the war. I saw in the news today that the Ukrainian army is conducting a large-scale training exercise aimed at preparing for an attack on a nuclear power plant in Russia. I can't pronounce what the name of the nuclear power plant is. I'm not even going to try.
I'm not going to judge you for that.
No. And also, obviously, in the news last week was about the Wagner progression potentially towards Moscow. So I think, you know, you can take those kinetic actions and look at perhaps the cyber reaction to that. You know, perhaps they're gearing up for something as a retaliation in cyberspace. It's all very interesting how those two pieces play in together. And so based on all of that, this is a really good example of how understanding the geopolitical landscape can help inform the conclusions we make around Russian and also just in general state-sponsored activity.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because, you know, we tend to see things separately, but once we take a look at that comprehensively, you know, you see how different parts play together, we really get like a better picture, a better understanding of what we're observing, like on the field, on one side of the other. So it's definitely an interesting take. And also it's an interesting campaign to look at, because as you were saying at the beginning, this is sort of like, if we're looking at the cyber kill chain, this is definitely in the part of the reconnaissance bit, right? So right at the beginning. So it is fair, I think, to assume that, you know, we're going to hear more about the outcome of this campaign in the future, even though we're hardly going to see how they were linked, you know?
And also, I think it's really interesting that we're kind of picking up more of these campaigns earlier on. Like, it seems like APT29 aren't so worried about being stealthy in this campaign, which is another interesting discussion around motivation. And we've spoken before on the podcast about how some Russian groups are kind of just doing away with stealth because they want to do more smash and grab and disruptive attacks. So that's something to consider here too.
I have a fun question for you guys. Maybe it's not fun, but what do you think is a bigger threat to most organizations, APT29 or CLOP?
Oh, CLOP, big time. I mean, unless, yeah, for most organizations, I would say CLOP. But then if we look at some of the sectors that we've highlighted in this campaign, it's probably APT29. Because, you know, if we look at like critical infrastructure, not critical infrastructure, but like more government and defense, I think CLOP and like espionage, that kind of threats, it's more high priority. But then, you know, for critical sectors like, I don't know, energy companies and all that kind of stuff, like having downtime caused by CLOP can cause like bigger damage. I don't know if you agree with that, Kim.
I would probably say that if you get targeted by either of those groups, the one that is going to cause you the most long-standing damage is APT29. Like, if we go back to that SolarWinds example, you've 2-3 years down the line, you've now got filings coming against individuals from that organization. So it's having more long-standing impact against the company and also the individuals in that company. Whereas I think a CLOP attack, yes, it's going to be disruptive and damaging at the time it happens, but I'm not sure it really has that same longevity.
Yeah.
What do you think, Rick?
I think it comes down to your threat model and what sector you're in. For most organizations, I think commodity ransomware is probably at the top of their list as far as likelihood. And the likelihood, if you're in critical infrastructure, is going to be a little bit different. So your threat model is going to be different. But I wouldn't want a targeted attack from CLOP that was targeting technology that I was using. And I certainly wouldn't want a targeted attack from APT-29 to go after me. I'd be more worried about the persistence component of APT-29 versus the persistence component of CLOP, because CLOP's going to move on to the next thing once they do what they do with their victims. And I think that builds on what Kim said about kind of the longevity and longer term implications. You know, there's a reason there's a P in APT.
Ooh, nice one. That took me a second to get there. I was like, what was the P? Then I get it. So yeah, I think these are all interesting takes. If you're listening to us and you want to express your thoughts on CLOP versus APT-21, feel free to reach out, because we want to hear your thoughts as well. And on that note, I'd say we move to the third section of today's episode, where we're going to talk a little bit about the ReliaQuest annual threat report that's just been released. So this report offers an in-depth and inclusive view of the cyber threat landscape, everything that happened over 12 months, so from the 1st of February 2022 to the 1st of February of 2023. Over the course of this period, the ReliaQuest threat research team has identified trends across several data sources, and we've analyzed them, you know, to give you the best insights into the cyber threats, trends, and observations. As you probably remember, those 12 months have been pretty intense, because we saw, you know, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a lot of ransomware attacks and data extortion groups appearing and conducting, you know, massive campaigns, and then a really big deal, really big number of high-risk vulnerabilities. So, Kim, can you give us an overview of the key findings of this report and also tell us why people should go download that report and read it?
Yeah, so the key findings are that we found the exploitation of remote services was the most commonly detected attack technique. So that's things like remote desktop protocol, virtual private networks, and those kind of techniques and those accesses are favored by a variety of threat actors. So cyber criminals, all the way through to nation state actors for initial access, but also for maintaining persistence. And RDP was also the most advertised access by initial access brokers across all of the listings that we analysed for this report. And we found that there was an average median price of those accesses of $1,000. So it gives you an idea of the kind of money that these criminals are making when they sell those stuff. We also identified a wide use of defense evasion techniques, so such as indicator removal from hosts and also data destruction, which emphasizes the effort that threat actors go to obfuscate their activity. So going back to AP29, like them using the residential proxies and switching them up regularly to evade detection. We analyzed all of the high risk vulnerabilities that occurred over that reporting period and assessed that Spring for Shell posed the greatest risk to organizations for its easy exploitation and for the potential to have like negative business impact on those that use it and or who might be targeted by exploitation of that. We found that initial access malware was still being mainly delivered by phishing. That's still a favored technique. And we detected many instances of malware like Emotet, Sock Ghoulish, Iced ID, Gootloader, and Bumblebee in our customer environments. So it gives an idea of the main initial access malwares that we're seeing out there. And talking of ransomware, Lockbit was by far the most active ransomware group in that reporting period. And that group has been increasingly using Sock Ghoulish to obtain initial access, which is an interesting link.
Cool. And one sentence to convince people to read the report, if you haven't convinced them already with your great overview of key findings.
Yeah. Go read it. All of those key findings I've mentioned there. There's loads more juicy detail about all of them and some great graphs.
Oof, I love the graphs. You gotta love a good old graph, you know, report with colors and everything. So yeah, do that if you like good graphs like me. Rick, you worked closely on these reports. Can you give us sort of a behind the scenes of, you know, the process of putting this report together, and also like what's the most challenging and rewarding part of doing these sort of reports? Like, I've done a few in the past. I know it takes a long time to do them. At the beginning, it's a gargantuan experience. You have to put like the intelligence requirements together, gather all the data, and then analyze it. And then there's graphs, and then there's creatives, a lot of people involved. Can you give us your take on putting these reports together?
The scale and the effort, you know, can't be understated. I think the collaboration on the team is a very wide group of individuals within ReliaQuest that contributed to it. And we looked at the external data that comes from the gray matter DRP side of the house. And then we combined that with what we saw on the inside of customer environments and things like that. And then try to bring out the top conclusions and key takeaways for people trying to better detect and respond to threats that are out there. So I think the teamwork was a big component. And you know, we're going to do this every year. We presented it, Maria and Brandon from the threat research team presented this at Exponent at our customer conference. It was well received. So we're excited to get this out, you know, to a wider audience there. But yeah, just a great team effort. I think it does show the value of combining the internal and external telemetry to put together a good narrative and how you can better build resiliency and security operations. It was fun to do, and we start planning. Well, of course, we're going to do after action reviews and those sorts of things and start planning for next year's iteration to see how we can get a little bit better on it.
Well, which, and I think that's the most important thing, right? Whenever you do these like EAD reports, just nice to, well, it's challenging, but it's nice to do them, to complete and publish them. But then it comes, the review, and then the sort of implementation of new features for the next one and the next one and the next one and so on. So yeah, well, if you haven't already downloaded, this is the sign to go and do that now, because it's a really nice report and it's just the first one. So you don't want to go, don't want to wait 1 year and then seeing the number two, but you haven't read the number one. So just do it, because it's really nice. And I think this marks the end of this episode 2. I hope you enjoyed it. Kim, Rick, thank you very much as always. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, I won't be here for the next episodes, but it's been really, really, really a really enjoyable experience. I've learned a lot from all of you. From you two, I've learned a great deal since I joined the team. So thank you very much. And yeah, talk to you soon. Bye-bye.